Welcome to the Ed Show, number 105.
Yeah, 105. It's a big number. We're getting there.
I'm just waiting for the next 95 episodes to be number 200. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Only 95
Simon.
To go.
Good to see you, my friend.
You too?
It's like
too.
We haven't seen each other in a while. I worked with the other Simon in the last one.
We're just back after the TechEd hangover.
You know, definitely, if you haven't had the opportunity at being to TechEd, the week after TechEd, you tend to be rather slow at getting back into the regular pace of things.
Yeah.
I still haven't been at the gym yet. We'll move on from that one.
Yeah, I don't think anyone needs to think about you going to the gym.
This is the Ed Show quarterly updates. Weekly show. We look after individual episodes once a week or so, and this one here is coming at you here from the studio.
Your episode?
It's technically my episode. We have only about four light news items. It's been a slow news week most part.
It's that TechEd news hangover as well. You kind of get past TechEd, and then there's not too much news for a while, and then we start to build up in a new cycle again. Although
I'm going to let you take the first one, my friend.
Yep.
This is called the 8.1 with Bing. So what is this, man?
With
what
Bing.
Is this?
Well, one of the things that we're trying to do with Windows is trying to make it so that you can get Windows for a lower total cost on more devices.
Okay.
One of the big places that we've been doing that is on those smaller screen devices where mm-hmm. they're down to 8-inch. We no longer charge the Windows license on. I think it's 8.5-inch, somewhere around there. But to try and help us to drive down the cost of larger screen devices as well, Windows 8.1 with Bing. It's a new option for OEMs. They can come along, take Windows 8.1, take Bing on there, push that out there, and we'll make it less costly for them to go and deploy that. It's a great thing. The really big thing for you guys, though, is that we are helping to drive down the price of devices.
So potentially this is going to be opening up the doors for more devices, different form factors, different OEM manufacturers, and they're going to have a cheaper cost of entry into getting the operating system onto the environment. We have no idea what it's going to look like as of yet.
If I have to kind of say where we're going to end up with this going, it's probably going to mean that more than, I think it's currently 40% of the devices sold in the US have touchscreens.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably going to be more like 80 to 90% very, very quickly.
Okay. And then for our legal advisors, this is not a forward-looking statement, by the way.
No, this is not a forward-looking statement.
This is just us talking about stuff.
Yeah.
That's it. But it's 8.1. Any devices coming out we're going to be able to see this at?
Not sure, actually, about specific devices at this point. We're waiting to release those, I think, around June 4, June 5, somewhere around there.
Oh, okay. Probably the Computex
in Taiwan. Yeah.
So we'll see what comes out of that particular conference mm-hmm. coming up. Next up, we actually have one I caught wind of via Corey Sanders, my good friend I interviewed at TechEd North America. He's the group program manager for Windows Azure Compute, as in IaaS type stuff. And this one's about how to set up and run FreeBSD on Azure. I did an episode a couple episodes ago where I had Abhishek in and talking online about Linux editions for Hyper-V. And obviously Hyper-V is something that we use up in the Azure world and Azure space for doing our virtualization. And so that's obviously going to be bleeding into different support of different images. And this is actually an entry that's done by Steven Zarkos. Senior Program Manager on the Windows team, on the Azure team, that talks about how to set up and work with a FreeBSD image that you make yourself and then host as your own gallery image.
Ooh.
So rather cool stuff. He actually has a pretty good description right down to where to get the FreeBSD, how to specifically set it up, resizing the VM, all the different commands you have to run. It's very, very, very nicely laid out. After being able to set this up. And basically, he gets an image that you can then generalize and then send up to Azure with an upload. And that becomes your own personal version of BSD implemented on the Azure side of things. But don't forget, there is the ability to go off and to get FreeBSD pre-made VM already all set to go from the Microsoft Open
thingy.
What's it?
What do they call that? The VM library.
The VM library.
Yeah.
Hanselman, of course, said in the VM Depot. vmdepot.msopentech.com. Leave it to Hanselman to supplement that at the end of the post, where you can basically have one made for you and then simply go off and use it from there. So cool stuff for FreeBSD in Azure.
And then Surface.
Surface it is, specifically the AMA that just recently,
literally
up hours before we recorded this.
Yeah. Yeah, so you probably saw last week we actually announced the Surface 3.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful piece of kit.
It's one of those shut up and take my money episodes.
Oh yeah, my entire Twitter feed last week was just shut up and take my money. Shut up, and you know it's a beautiful piece of equipment. Having had hands on with it for a while.
What? You've had hands-on with it.
I might have had hands-on with it for a little bit of time.
See, that's what happens when you're the client guy that gets to go off and do these nice, fun events in the States, man.
Yeah.
I get to touch, like, misty cloud stuff, and that's it.
Yeah, I got to go down to DC the day after the launch last week and kind of show some folks the device. Beautifully thin. Beautifully, beautifully thin device. It actually has a little tiny fan in there. Mm-hmm. Emits no air hardly that you can feel around the edge. Beautiful. Keyboard's nice, has multiple angles on it, works really, really well. Cool piece of hardware. And in this AMA, details obviously at the bottom of the show notes, Panos has really revealed a few little nuggets about it. So things like the Pro 3 actually supports connected standby. So when you open up your device, your email's going to be up to date.
Oh, nice.
Nice. Really neat little feature. It was something that was there on the RT devices previously.
But it wasn't on the Intel.
Wasn't on the Pro. Yeah, so we've added that. The other thing as well that I like about this, particularly great for Rick when he claws his stuff, it's now changed color slightly.
Right, the it's no longer black, gunmetal black anymore?
Yeah, it's now silver. And you know what? The metal underneath is silver.
Okay.
So when you scratch it.
When I scratch it, it's now going to actually show up less?
Yeah.
Because right now I've got stickers over top of my ones that I've got problems with.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also noticed in the AMA that they have battery life recommendations saying that the 3, the 5, and the 7 are all going to have similar battery life, which is very cool.
Yeah, I think that's going to be pretty damn impressive. There's a different amount of output for display as well. Mm-hmm. The 5 and the 7 do two 4K outputs.
Wow.
Yeah, so if you've got some 4K screens, you can have two of those attached. Getting kind of cool, it has to be said. I mean, I'm trying to run the kind of traditional desktop on a 4K screen is going to be an interesting environment. That's one of the reasons why those modern apps look so beautiful when they're on a high-res screen. You get lots of nice curving on stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's a great place to be. Lovely bit of kit.
Nice. Well, I'm still waiting for my approval to get a Surface Pro 3. This is my Surface Pro 1 right now. So, again, I'm a server guy. What can I say? Server guy and cloud guy. Last episode, last little nugget that we happen to have is actually a community event that we have one of our own speaking at.
Yeah.
Mr. Simon Perriman is going to be at Tech Day San Francisco, June 5th and 6th. Coming up in San Francisco, in case you happen to be in that kind of area. There's a bunch of different speakers that are there.
Yeah.
This is put on by the PAC IT Pros, and we decided to do a quick little tip of the hat and shout out to this particular good event that's going on. They still have spots available in case you're interested. By the time you get the show, you still be able to register and be able to attend.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've also got not just Simon, but a couple of the US evangelists as well, Janelle.
Oh, yes.
Jessica is down there, both of them presenting a couple of different sessions across the whole thing. It's going to be a really cool day.
Good stuff. Go check that one out. Tech Day San Francisco, June 5th and 6th, 2014. And with that, it is a break, I do believe, to go off into cover off stuff. In case you missed the Channel 9 live stream that took place during TechEd last week, or the week before now, actually.
How could anybody have missed it?
I don't know. There's some people that missed it. I don't know why, but they did. You were able to go in, and I'm going to basically recap a great interview I sat down with Jeffrey Snover to talk about becoming a differentiated IT pro. And there's a couple of announcements he made during that one particular session as well.
Yeah, it was nice that he just dropped those little bombs in there.
Yeah, because technically he was going to a closed session that was now available on demand, but wasn't available live. So he said, you know what, I'll just do my announcements here too. So some good news that's in there for DSC for Linux, amongst other things. So stay tuned after the break and take a look at myself and Snover having a nice little conversation. And we're back here on the Channel 9 live stage at TechEd North America in Houston. And I have managed to score one of the pinnacle guests, I would say, in my opinion.
One?
One. Just one of the pinnacle. Maybe I can give you the pinnacle. Because you're here right now, I'll say you're the pinnacle guest.
The pinnacle guest for the 3 o'clock time slot.
The 3 o'clock time slot. I'm joined by...
The best 3 o'clock on a Tuesday guest.
How about this? I've got one of the best distinguished engineers in the company here with me today, Mr. Jeffrey Snover. Thank you for joining
us. How you doing?
I really appreciate
Always
you
a
taking
pleasure.
The time to come down, my friend. But you do have to run off because you are going to be assisting with the session and doing some announcements and stuff like that during the session.
Breaking news.
And so
yes.
Breaking news. So I do have a time clock that has not started as of yet to let us know that we will be on time for being able to do that. And there's the time clock, and it's now moving. Perfect. I love that. But, you know, we were chatting about this on Sunday during one of the parties that we were at. We were at the crew party at the House of Blues. And I reminded you that you brought up a term. I don't know if you created this term or not,
But you liked it, I did.
It's a great term. Differentiated IT pro.
Yes.
And so how would you start that off? Like, where did this come from? Maybe you created it, maybe not. You coined it. I'll give you the credit for it.
Yeah, so
but
really,
give me your thoughts on this.
Sure, it really came as I thought about the challenges of the IT pro community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so much software now is going to be available as a software as a service.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fantastic offering. You know, you can go run the software in the cloud. It's their servers. They keep it up to date. They maintain it. They patch it. All that great stuff. And the question is, well, what does that mean to IT pros, right? And the point I made was that, hey, if you're an IT pro and you're just offering the standard out-of-the-box experience, right? You get the installer and you say, click next, click next, click next, click next. I mean, that experience is really what's going to be offered in the cloud at much lower costs. So that if that's what you do, yeah, that job's probably going to the cloud. On the other hand, there's a great opportunity for people to provide what I call differentiated IT, right? So the cloud, by its nature, is going to define a small set of limited offerings. But with the software, you can do almost anything. So if you figured out how to take your software and really advance your business's objectives, your business objectives with it, you can have differentiated IT and really be a core part of the business value proposition. Now, in general, that means doing something other than click next, click next, click next.
Right.
It's saying, hey, what are the needs of the business, and how can I help the business achieve its goals through IT?
The statement that you made there about, you know, that job's going away, that's probably what's on a lot of people's minds.
Sure.
I know that Joey Snow and I had done two sessions around the real-world examples of how to level up into something different. And automation and PowerShell and, like you said, providing some level of a differentiated platform for yourself is where people need to go.
Yep.
And it's more of a matter of, you know, you've been in the industry how many years now? You don't
over
have to reveal
30.
Over 30.
Over 30.
I'm over
what
20. I'm over 20 to 25
'kay.
Myself, and it's a matter of the people that work in IT that we're gluttons for punishment. We know that the IT world is in a state of constant change, and change brings on challenges. But
yes.
We like to solve those, right?
Well, and we are the ones that bring about the change.
Right. Totally.
We are inventors. We are creators.
So, Sometimes we end up being the ones that are resisting it. Sometimes we don't. We have to embrace it because it's the way to go.
Yep.
But they take too much time, potentially, and other things are distracting us from being able to do the differentiation.
Yep.
But embracing that and rolling with it and going with it is where people need to go.
Exactly. You know, whenever there's these big changes in the industry, we have to change ourselves to accommodate it, right? I like to give the example of plug and play, right?
Yep.
Prior to plug and play, a bunch of IT pros were like experts at unfolding paper clips and, you know, doing dip switches and
IRQ7, IRQ11 for the Sound Blaster cards. Which one was it supposed to be?
And the IO maps and the config IOs and oh my lord. And you know, I don't know, anybody out there that's like an expert in that today? No. Anybody does that today? No. So there was some innovation that said, hey, you don't no longer need to do that. You need to do something else. And most people, I don't know anybody who lost their job because they
couldn't do the dip switch anymore.
Couldn't do the dip switch anymore.
No.
Well, they had to change their skill set.
Yeah. I was about to say, Clippy probably lost his job.
Thank God.
But I think he's working at a Genius Bar right now, popping SIM chips out of cell phones or something like that.
Okay.
But from a differentiated IT pro perspective, it's not just you know, I need to learn PowerShell. That was something that we've been saying and you've been saying for a very long time.
Yep.
As you know, the godfather of PowerShell. Let me tell you my approach, how I've been doing it.
Yeah. Please.
I don't know if this is typical or not. As I come across something I need to do, configure something, work with something, my default option now is to look and say, can I do this from PowerShell?
Yep.
And luckily, all the stuff that I need to do, obviously, is working mostly with Microsoft products, but also some non-Microsoft products, and there tends to be modules for them.
Yeah.
And then I don't know anything about what the modules do, but I can do a get-help and then command line, and then it works.
Yes.
And I can figure out some more, and then that makes me curious by nature, and I continue to go. Is that like a more organic way that we should be starting to learn if we're just dipping our toes in?
No, that's exactly. That was the entire topic of my session, my unplugged session last yesterday.
Okay.
It's live on, or it's...
It's available for download right now on channel9.msdn.com.
Yeah, and so I basically go through that. It's like, hey, don't try and memorize this stuff. Nobody memorizes this stuff.
Thankfully.
And that was one of the goals of my talk was to show you, hey, I'm a distinct distinguished engineer. I'm the lead architect for Windows Server and System Center Data Center. I've been doing this over 30 years. I invented this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I got up there on stage and I said, well, let's try some things. And I made spelling mistakes and I got errors and I made stuff. And the answer is, yeah, that's the deal. Just go with it. Go explore. And so there's a key set of things you want to learn to explore.
Okay.
You know, help.
Right.
Get command. Show command.
Yeah.
Get member. And with these few set of things you learn, you can do everything.
My definite favorite one that I think I need to put, I don't know if you can put it, can you put an alias on a switch that's a part of a command, or is it just a command you can do aliases
you,
for?
No, you can. As if you've written the command, you can.
Oh, okay. Well, I want to see if I can find someone that can put in a different version of the dash what if command to put in a dash clause command, because I've been known to break things, so that what if allows me to go off and try some very extensive PowerShell stuff without blowing things up to see if I was right first.
Perfect.
So we need to talk about that.
Okay.
We can work that one in. Maybe a custom build is for me or something like that. If you have any questions for Mr. Snover here, is there like a title that comes, like, is it Distinguished Snover? Is it a?
Oh, I like that.
Distinguished Snover. If you have any questions for Jeff, Jeffrey Snover, you're more than welcome to go to the channelline.msdn.com website. There is an area there you can go ahead and post some questions. I've got some help in the back there that are going to be able to pop those up. And just for you know, they will show up there on the screen in case anything comes up.
Excellent.
There was also some big announcements that were going on for some things with regards to, this was back, we talked to Build, when you guys announced WMF5.
Yes.
Now, Windows Management Framework.
Yes.
WMF5, otherwise known as the, what's the gang sign? Is it this? Is it the other way?
My people.
It's this way. I get it. Anyway, you got it.
It's a PowerShell prompt if you can't see that.
You got it. Can you let me
in, the tribe.
Can you let me in on maybe a couple of your tidbits that you like them that, around WMF5, around PowerShell?
So first, the WMF5 is the big news, okay?
Right.
So in the past, the way this worked was we would go innovate managing technology, we put it in the next version of Windows, mm-hmm. and then we would put it in the Windows Management Framework and make it available down level.
It seems rather long cycle.
Long cycle, right. So in fact, when we did it for, 2012, it had been 3 years since we had released anything to the industry.
Right.
And then we made it available down level. And then the one after that was 1 year, et cetera. But now what we announced at Build is a completely different mindset, kind of getting ourselves on a cloud footing. So what we do now is we innovate managing technology, and we make it available first in the Windows Management Framework.
Yep.
And then we'll innovate, and then we'll put it in the next version of Windows, and then take it down level.
Okay.
So the stuff that we're innovating and releasing as it's available is available only on the latest versions of the operating system. Mm-hmm. And then we'll settle it and bring it down level.
Okay.
So then what we did at Build was we announced, one, a set of PowerShell commandlets to manage top-of-rack switches.
Okay, like the Aristas and others.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So as long as they implement, in 2012, we implemented a certified for logo program for network switches.
I was going to say that's OMI or?
It's the standard, and the way people implemented it is something called OMI. OMI is Open Management Interface.
Right.
So you got the Windows Management Interface. Open Management Interface is the open source implementation of that.
Okay.
We've got that running on 41 Unix variants, a number of the switch vendors are running it to implement the standards so that they can be certified with Windows.
Okay.
And so that's Cisco, Arista, Huawei, and some other vendors I can't announce yet. But
those are some big names. So that means you're going to be able to manage the switches from command line, from PowerShell.
Without having to add any extra software. You just get one of these boxes and boom, 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 you're managing it.
Okay.
So that's number one.
Yes.
Number two was a bunch of refreshes and performance improvements to desired state configuration.
Okay.
We should talk some more about that because that's the big news.
I'll make a note of that one there.
And then something called OneGet. So let's talk about the problem I'm trying to address and then how OneGet addresses it. So, whenever you stand up a new server or even a new laptop, my experience is you have what I call the scavenger hunt.
Yes.
Like, getting the operating system, that's the beginning of your journey, my friend.
It's patches like, on top of that, it's all fine, but you're missing everything else.
Roll up the sleeves, find my favorite browser, find my favorite Zoomit, find sysinternals, get this software, get that runtime, and where is it? Oh, well, I go to the search engine. And you know what? There's so many great things out there that I don't use because I provision machines so quickly.
Yep.
I'm constantly trying out the new version of the OS.
It falls off the list.
And it's like, oh, there's something something somewhere. Never mind. So, no, it's true.
It's true.
And, so what OneGet is designed to solve the scavenger hunt, to eliminate the friction between you and having the system be exactly the way you want it. And so what it's envisioned is as a package multiplexer. You're sitting there, you PowerShell. There's a repository. Right now, the repository is something called Chocolatey.
Okay.
It's based upon NuGet.
I was about to say Chocolatey sounds familiar from my friends that work with NuGet stuff.
There you go. Okay. Exactly. So it's based upon NuGet.
Yeah.
And it's got over 1,700, well, last time I looked at it, over 1,700 unique packages. And so you can then just say, find the package. It shows you a list of package. You can say, install, zoom it.
Yeah.
It'll go download it, and you can install it.
Okay. Who curates the versions of the stuff that's inside NuGet? That's the current
excellent
concern
question
I have right now, because I like Notepad++ for my editing.
Yep.
I like Zoomit. I like Process Monitor and stuff like that from SysInternals. But do all those independent vendors have to go and manage these, or someone else curate them, or what?
So right now it is a community repository. A community repository says somebody put that there. So maybe Mark Rusinovich in his spare time put SysInternals up there, but I talked to Mark and I'm pretty sure he didn't.
I don't think he did, yes.
So somebody else did. And the question is, well, is it really SysInternals? Did they SysInternals plus some other stuff? And the answer is, we don't know.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so that's sort of the way community repositories work.
Yeah.
But that's where it works right now. And then what you'll see is, one, you can set up your own repository. So you can go and say, oh, well, I'm going to curate my own repository. I'll put the stuff I trust in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, two, you'll see other repositories show up.
Okay.
So you'll almost certainly see Microsoft do something in this space.
Okay, okay. So different vendors could also go in and do the same kind of thing, and they'd have their own curated version of the stuff that's official, and then the community would still be able to continue.
Exactly correct. And so you can then register different package sources.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. Why do we call it OneGet?
Yeah.
And it is the OneGet. So it's a package multiplexer. So we'll be able to go get things out of, you know, a multiplexer.
No, I'm getting there. I'm following you.
Okay. So at first, you know, whenever you have a multiplexer and only has one thing, people get the, why is that a multiplexer? Sorry, my friends, that's what Agile looks like. Agile means when you ship the multiplexer, when you have the multiplexer, you ship the multiplexer. Even if you have only one thing, it multiplexes. So that's what we did with OneGet. Right now, version one, it only went against Chocolatey.
Okay.
But starting tomorrow,
tomorrow,
the next version of the Windows Management Framework comes out. Now, did I notice the time difference there? It was about a month.
Yeah.
A month.
That's a very fast cycle.
Request cycle.
I was just catching up with version 3 at one point.
So version 1, we now have extended OneGet to do work against PowerShell repositories. And so this is called PowerShell Get. And basically the OneGet commands will work against Chocolatey or the PowerShell repository. But then we also have a set of PowerShell commands that will use that infrastructure and then provide a more rich PowerShell experience.
Okay.
And so this makes it easy to go out and find things. And then, again, we're going to, we've got a repository there.
Yeah.
We've got a few things in it.
Yeah.
About 1,700 things.
Okay.
And that's going to be by invitation only for a while until we get that going, and then we'll open it up to the public.
Okay. We have a slew of questions that are just now starting to come in there, and I think you talked about some of these already there. But obviously, it's not the very first one here. Someone's asking about, you know, you're not wearing a tie today. Is this a new thing? You're relaxing the look a little bit?
I messed up. I didn't key that I was going to be here.
Or presented. So, well, okay, well, there you go, Neil Hudson, just so you're wondering. The tie is not available. It's back in his hotel room. But how about, we were talking about OneGet. Let's continue on that path. OneGet is only for WMF5. Can you use Chocolatey to get OneGet packages? So can you go the other direction? We're talking about being able to tie into Chocolatey from OneGet to be able to get stuff.
Yes.
Can it go the other way, too?
Can you get OneGet from Chocolatey?
Yes.
I believe the answer is yes. I know that the guy, the developer, had intended that. I don't know whether he's pushed that package there or not.
Okay. So we'll say that one as a stay tuned for more information that's there.
Yeah.
For younger sysadmins who are just getting started, can we catch up or are we always going to be behind? There seems to be a steep learning curve when I look at scripts from top experts. So
everyone's always behind.
Everyone's always.
That's
the nature of the business.
Yeah.
But
if you don't want to be behind, get into lumber. Oh, seriously. My best friend is in the lumber industry, right?
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, wow, what a great deal. Like, when was the last time a new tree came out? Right? So I'm sure, you know, there's an activity. He learned his body of
knowledge and expertise.
Spending his time fishing and spending it with his family. Nice. If you're in this industry, you are always behind.
Okay. But you can definitely, Brian T, again, we mentioned this earlier, Jeffrey did a session about different approaches and ways you can go off and start to learn PowerShell and go up to that next level. Check back on Channel 9 for that particular session.
But, you know, there's a great story about the younger guys. I remember hearing a story about a new tax bill came out, and these young lawyers were jumping up and down in the hallway like they were so excited about this. And then one of the older guys like, what are you talking about? Do you understand how much work this is going to be? And they're like, yeah, but before this new tax bill, you were a senior guy, and I didn't know anything. Now we both don't know anything.
Nice. It's an equalizer.
It's an equalizer.
I like that one there. How will PowerShell help to achieve the DevOps culture?
Oh, yeah, DevOps. So that is one of our big motivation to achieve a DevOps culture. So DevOps is really this idea of saying, you're a developer, I'm an operator.
Right.
Used to be, you'd write code and throw it over the wall.
Say, here's the wall.
Yeah, throw it over, and I'd get this, and I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? And something would break, and you'd say, I'm a genius, those guys can't run systems. And I'd say, I'm a great operator, those guys can't write software that can be run.
Yeah.
DevOps is really, hey, how do we integrate these people together so that they work together to achieve a business goal?
Right.
And a number of the elements of DevOps is automation, repeatability, and moving fast. So PowerShell is kind of a core technology in your DevOps toolkit.
Right.
And the latest version of PowerShell, PowerShell version 4, we started down a technology that really is almost exclusively focused in on DevOps, and that is desired state configuration.
Right.
Desired state configuration allows you to say, here's the way I want the world to be, make it so. And then we will go and make it so, and then we will monitor the system, and if there's ever any change in the system, we will detect that and repair it.
I actually didn't know that part. I thought it was just for the purpose of deploying and making sure it was standardized and had it all there, but it actually monitors as well.
Yes, monitors and makes it so. So last year, so we rolled this out, and we were here at TechEd New Orleans last year, and everything went fine. And then we went to TechEd Europe like a month later, and in the middle of our session, something went wrong. I don't know, I deleted something, I did something wrong. And by the way, I do that all the time, right?
I'm glad to know that you're fallible like every other human like the rest of us.
Oh, my Lord. I screw up all the time. So I screwed something up, and there I am in the middle of this important demo, and things aren't working. So it's like, okay, well, you talk to the audience, and I just did the equivalent of, if you're a developer, make clean, reset the environment, build the demo, and 2 minutes later, it was up and running, and it's like, okay, now let me continue on. And it was so gorgeous, because in the heat of the moment, you know, when I get flummoxed, when it's tense like that, I tend to make more mistakes.
Of course.
You know, you made a mistake, oh no, it's high value thing, I made another mistake, I'm going to make it, and the cascades, I have some really bad, funny examples of that. Not for you.
Not for public viewing.
Not for public. But anyway, so I was just able to very calmly say, make it the way I want it to be, and it did that, and then I was able to proceed. It really was a transformational experience. I knew the story, but then experiencing it really set the hook, and so we are very passionate about driving on desired state configuration. By the way, it's a platform play.
Right.
Okay, so the platform. So the big difference is some people say, oh, what about this company? What about that company? They already have solutions in this space. And the answer is they don't really work. They work great in Unix environments, but they don't work very well in Windows environments. And that's because Windows is kind of an API-oriented system versus a document-oriented system.
Right.
In Windows, every single management tool only does 4 things. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not.
Yes. Every single Linux management tool does 4 things. It adds things to files.
Right.
It removes things from files, and it modifies lines in files. And then it restarts processes. Okay. If you can do those 4 things, you can be an awesome management tool.
I would say that's kind of like, get dash, add dash.
Well, see, now why do we have to write those? Originally, I tried to take those Unix tools and run them on Windows and say, hey, done. Let's go on to the next problem. Those tools didn't work at all.
Right.
And why? Because there is no Etsy groups. You know, you can't use awk against the registry. You can't use set against WMI.
Mm-hmm.
You can't use grep against Active Directory. And so we are an API-oriented system. And so what we do is we had to have these commandlets. And so that's why, you know, these tools kind of, these configuration management tools kind of hit a wall when it comes to Windows. They can do IIS, because IIS is document-oriented, but nothing else is. And so So what we're doing is we're providing a platform that then you can build upon, these other tools can build upon. And if you want, you know, you can use desired state configuration, use that as a solution. But we're working with some of the other vendors, like Chef we had on stage, great partner. They showed how the desired state configuration resources fit directly into their tool chain, that how they can use it. But then they add a bunch of value-add stuff on top. Workflow integration,
right.
Charting and graphing, reporting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, before coming on stage, you were talking about a certain type of server that you wanted to talk about.
Well, before we go there, can I can I break the news?
Sure. Well, we have breaking news if you wanted to do it.
We do have breaking news.
I don't know which camera to look at to be able to do the breaking news, which one's live right now, and our producer is not
paying
attention.
I'll go back and forth.
So go back and forth. Okay. Breaking news, Jeffrey Stover.
Breaking news. So breaking news is I'm about to leave here and go demonstrate the next version of this next phase of desired state configuration, and that is desired state configuration running on Linux.
Wow.
That's right. A Windows team developing.
Wait a sec. What?
Linux software. Yes.
Running on Linux.
So we did when we did desired state configuration is we did standards-based management.
Yes.
So when you write that PowerShell thing, what actually happens is it produces a standards document that then gets handed to WMI to make it so. That WMI agent then calls a bunch of WMI providers and makes it so, or PowerShell scripts.
Okay.
And so what we did was, I mentioned to you OMI.
Yes.
In the network switches.
Yeah.
And running on 41 different versions of Linux, Unix. We took that, we took our agent, we ported it on Unix, and so now the same desired state configuration can go to Windows or to Unix.
Nice.
Now, why do we do that? We're a cloud OS, my friend. We're a cloud OS. That changes everything. That's where you see cloud OS sees a bunch of Windows guys writing Linux code. How's that work? Because we're a cloud OS. I need to manage the servers. I need to manage the OSs. I need to manage the storage. I need to manage the network. And I want to have a single common way to manage them all.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mind blown.
This is not your dad's Microsoft. And it's
mind
fun. We're having
blown.
A blast.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't even know how to top that one up, my friend. That's
Snowflake servers.
Yes. So let's leave with this one here because I want to make sure that you get to the next session. You have to go off to do that. So tell me the story about this concept, this term that you're talking about, called a Snowflake server.
Yeah. So think about a snowflake, right? A snowflake. Every single snowflake is unique and precious. You know, but in fact, that's often the way we build our servers, right? I go and I craft it and I make sure it's just perfectly right. And this one's different than that one. That's different than that one. And the answer is we don't want that, right? That's a very fragile environment. Instead, we want to have servers that whenever you have an issue, you want to start from a well-known state, you want to apply a well-defined set of operations in a well-defined order, and you always get to the same state.
Yes.
Therefore, if you ever have any problem, you just throw that thing away and start from that known state and recreate it, and you always get to the same thing. Now, turns out that then gives you a repeatable, high-quality product that then if you ever say, well, that's not really what I want, well, the answer is you either started from the wrong state or you did some step differently. So all you do is you go and you change one of the steps. Did that give you what you want? No. Change the step. Did that give you what you want? No. Change the step. Did that give you what you want? Yes. Great. Do it again. Do it again. Do it again. Do it again. Do it again.
Nice.
And this is what's called, in Japanese quality circles, called the Taguchi method.
Okay.
Where that was it. You first get a repeatable process, and then you change it. If you like the change, keep the change. If you don't like the change, stop doing that change. And then step by step by step, you get improved quality.
So my issue over the last couple of weeks, and I can see Joey Snow over there laughing at me right now, is that I've not embraced this Taguchi methodology. I will sit there and just continue to bash against it and try to do it. I think that's the bulk of people that work in this industry. You just want to do that. Step back, Padawan. I'll see if I can do that.
It's a new model, right? It's a new way of thinking. And frankly, the tool chain hasn't supported you doing that. And so that's what we're doing. We're giving you the tool chain that allows you to adopt that mindset of, hey, I start with a repeatable process. You know, here's the vision. Actually, I stole this from the Chef guys. Pretty smart guys. They said, you want to treat your servers like cattle, not pets. Like, don't go to it to catch that thing. Its future's known, right?
I love that.
You just want to start. Anything goes wrong, just throw it away, rebuild it.
Jeffrey, I'm just going to say thank you very much for coming down and spending time with us today. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
Go off. Have a great session. Okay. You know we're going to do stuff with Don Jones, is it not?
Don Jones.
There you go. Well, you've got your entourage waiting for you over there to get you off the next room.
Perfect. So Windows Management Framework.
You got it.
Desired state configuration on Linux. Crazy stuff. Have fun.
So what'd you think?
Great interview.
Not bad.
Nice.
Eh?
I saw it live. I didn't have to watch the video.
Yeah, well, yeah. You know. hopefully you'll watch the rest of it. What'd you think about the interview and also about the show? Leave us a comment down below inside the comment fields.
You can send us a tweet at TNEdge.
We do at monitor TNEdge. At TNEdge, and yep. We reply back and we say hello. My name is @RicksterCDN.
And I'm @SimonSlyMonster.
You got it.
Yeah. Facebook.
Oh, Facebook. Yeah, you can reach on Facebook too. Facebook.com/Channel9EdgeShow, if I remember correctly.
That's the one. We need to get the likes up.
Yeah.
More likes.
More likes. I need a shorter URL, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, we might have to get an AKA MS on that at some point. Anyway, thanks very much for watching The Edge Show. We'll see you next time.